You are listening to the This Life podcast with Dr. Drew Pinsky and me, Mike Catherwood.
That's right. We're doing it this time. So check it out. Thanks for listening.
You live.
And there we are. You live, Mike.
That is the whole reason that we have that saying that we have is because of that. Yeah. If it wasn't for that, we would have never had that discussion.
Tell them briefly again.
It's a scene in Boogie Nights.
And Mike referenced it all the time without me understanding it.
I would just come into Loveline and just go, yeah. And Drew's like, what is that? Why do you yell like Tarzan? I said, no, sir.
No, there was this guy holding a gun.
Johnny Doe.
Forget it. So before we get started, we've got this, of course, important episode. We've got our great guest, Tyler and Caitlin here from Teen Mom. They'll be here in just a second. We also want to share this with the Facebook followers. We appreciate your support.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sorry. I didn't pick up on my cue. Everyone, it is the This Life podcast with Dr. Drew and myself, Mike Catherwood, the special hashtag You Live edition. I am Dr. Drew's partner on KABC 790 AM, Midday Live, which airs daily, 12 to 3 p.m. on that's the Pacific Standard Time. And it's also available on iTunes. We also are live on YouTube/Dr. Drew. And this will be available also as the usual This Life podcast with Dr. Drew and Bob Forrest. Subscribe and get it first.
And, all right. Susan, we have Facebook people out there right now. So please go ahead and ask your questions through Facebook or call in. And remember, all the shows I have are available at drdrew.com. We've got the Dr. Drew podcast, Adam and Dr. Drew. Those of you who don't know that Adam and I are back together again daily. Weekly Infusion with Dr. Spaz, and of course this one. We feature a link to the KBC News Talk Radio show also. We have with Mike. Dr. Bruce. I did some stuff with him yesterday. It was great.
So not a Spaz.
12 to 3 Pacific, you can find us there, Midday Live. He's a Spaz. I realize now why Adam gets frustrated with him. Not that I don't love him anymore than I always have. I just get what Adam is frustrated with.
I bow at the altar of Corolla just as much as anyone. But Adam will get frustrated with anyone.
Oh.
Given the amount of time.
We mean 3 minutes.
Yeah, anyway, well, I'm just saying that's the thing.
Oh yeah.
Oh, Mike Catherwood still wants to bang her.
No.
I'll bang you. Just spend time with me.
And let me explain too. By the way, I'm wearing sunglasses today.
Yeah. Do you want to reference that?
I know. Just thinking that we have Facebook out there. I forgot that I was wearing them. Reason is I had eye surgery 2 days ago. I am in unbelievable pain, and my eyes are closed. And I thought it's very weird to look at a camera with my eyes closed. Sorry, we'll just wear sunglasses.
As the great Norm Macdonald once told me, there's two types of people that wear sunglasses indoors. It's fucking blind people and assholes.
Well, I am blind, I guess.
No, you have legitimate reason.
Yeah. So what's the rest of this thing say here, Mike?
Oh, which
there's
one?
Another page.
Well, there's two. Yes. Yeah. So I got to make sure that I get the right one. Take a quick moment.
Sign up for the email list.
And yes, make sure that you sign up for the contact and email list. Hashtag You Live Facebook call-in show coming up. You can call in and talk to the guests, myself and Dr. Drew Pinsky. It's all live in person, ready for you. The number is 323-649-8268. That's 323-649-8268. And that'll be coming up right after we talk to these two lovely
people. And it's Lindsay, who used to be our Loveline screener.
She's insane, and she's very crazy.
So she can get here.
When you call her.
Oh, she made it.
Mike called her LARPer, LARPing Lindsay. All right, also.
She defended LARPing.
It wasn't just
that she's into LARPing. It was that she took it to task. Yes. How dare you?
Yes, she was offended.
I was like, well, it's very easy to make fun of you.
And then she recorded LARPing. Remember that? She had all those video, interviews with LARPers.
Lightning bolt.
It did not make her case for her. Also, we want to thank our sponsor, Hydrolite. Go to the banner doctor.com for details. I need Hydrolite right now because of this eye surgery thing. In fact, ask Susan to please get it out of the car. We've got a 30% discount for everyone who clicks on the banner and uses the code Dr. Drew HY for Hydrolite. DrDrewHY. Check out. That is Dr. Drew HY. 30% off today. We also have the link here on Facebook as well. And I cannot, for the life of me, see that tiny print on the bottom of the page. So, Mike, whatever that says, please have at it.
Find us here on Facebook, Twitter, at Dr. Drew, at Mike Catherwood.
Under where it says end.
Under where it says end?
It's the end. Okay. You guys move on.
It's all too small. Thank you, Producer Susan, my wife. And it's a really privileged day to welcome Tyler and Caitlin from Teen Mom. Tyler, Kate, hey, welcome, guys.
Hey, how you doing?
So we had Amber in here, and Tyler texted like, "Hey, what are we, chop liver? Well, how about us?" I said, like, "I'll have you in a second."
Like, oh,
You know how I love you guys.
There's something about the Teen Mom stuff that just gets so much heat. And I mean that as a, like a positive. It attracts a certain level of interest amongst social media that I...
Well, not only that, imagine this. I mean, these guys grew up in front of cameras, and not only did they really come into adulthood as such, they grew up and were on TV in the time when social media began. So they had to navigate all this. And so I was always very amazed that they were able to do so. But again, welcome, guys.
Thanks for having us.
So, you know,
media, we're kind of used to all that craziness,
right?
Well, you can say you're used to it, and I'm sure you're better at dealing with it than the average person.
Me.
But it still has to sting, you know, when you're carelessly checking your Twitter, just killing time, and someone's like, "Hey, you suck, you're fat,
well,
you die."
Especially since Caitlin's talked about her mental health issues, and they've had been in and around adoption and all the feelings people have about that. So it's got to be intense for you guys.
Well, I use the block button a lot.
She told me. Block.
Oh, I thought she said the black button.
I thought
that's
that
where,
too.
That's where I go on YouPorn. I go immediately to the black button.
Then I'm scrolling through stuff. It's like all positive. Who wants to read negative things about themselves? So
well, you have nothing. To be fair, Caitlin, I remember when it did used to bother you before you learned how to use the block button, right?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh, definitely. I mean, if you're reading negative things about yourself, it can bring you down. So I was like, why even read that stuff? There's way more supporters than there are haters.
And honestly, most of that stuff comes out of ignorance anyway. They just don't know the full extent of the situation they're judging on. So it's kind of like, you know, they just kind of let it.
See, I think that's a positive way of looking at it. When it comes to things like bigotry or racism, I agree it comes out of ignorance. But when someone is just mindlessly throwing out insults to a stranger, I don't even think that's ignorance. I think that's like a really dysfunctional kind of feeling. Because I'm messed up. I'm a messed up guy, and I'm vulnerable, and I'm insecure in many ways. I've never once thought to myself, I have no idea who this person is across the globe. Let me just tell them that they suck or that they're fat or that
it's weird.
I think that it's beyond ignorance. It's like some type of weird
aggression.
Insecurity and aggression. Yeah.
I think a lot of it's just to do with projection, and people just aren't happy with themselves. So why not just, you know, focus the negative attention on somebody else? I mean, I think it's really weird too. I don't really understand it.
Or they're being bullied themselves.
You're right.
I mean, there's a lot of things to it, I think. And it's not right. Not saying it's right.
And listen, we're an easy target. We're on TV. It's kind of a controversial subject, you know, teen pregnancy and then adoption on top of it. You know, so we're an easy target.
Hey, and let me ask you, Tyler and Caitlin, because Dr. Drew can't really explain it, and I don't know if he even feels comfortable exploring it. But why do you
can't wait to see what's going to come out of your mouth next?
No,
but go ahead.
I think you'll like this question. Why is it that, from your guys' perspective, if someone who's been down this road with Dr. Drew, with all the finales, Dr. Drew does a lot of things that spark controversy. Something about him being involved in the Teen Mom finale shows gets people all riled up. And I mean, really, he becomes now responsible for all you guys, and he's how dare he do A, B, and C.
And you know, straighten out Farrah and don't let her tell you. It's like, what?
Good luck straightening out Farrah. Yeah. Good luck.
Seriously. What do you think? Because, I mean, I totally understand why Celebrity Rehab or even some of his takes on certain public figures and their medical condition, it's going to rub certain people the wrong way. Why is it that by virtue of hosting a show once or twice a year, that he gets so much crap for it?
I think people have like the wrong expectations maybe of what he's really there to do. He's actually just a host, and he's really not there to like diagnose us and fix us.
Yeah, it gets confusing because I offer myself as a resource to them, and these guys have always used it over the years very appropriately. I try to help them find services and things like that, but I'm not their doctor, which people and I'm not the producer. It's not my show. I host a gathering with them twice a year, but somehow the whole thing becomes my responsibility. It's crazy.
It could be the same without you, Dr. Drew. Though really, we love having Dr. Drew a part of it. So.
I appreciate that. It's been, and to that end, I was thinking to myself what it was like when I first met you guys. You remember that first meeting?
Yeah, we were scared.
Because I'd watched the show on the plane on the way over there.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, this guy, Tyler and Kayla, I must meet these two. And I pulled them into my dressing room and said, I've got to talk to you guys. What did you think I was going to say?
Well, no, actually, it was a lady came, which I think she was your assistant at the time, with the shoot, and we didn't know what we were doing, our first time ever being in a dressing room or anything like that. And she's like, you need to come with me now. Dr. Drew needs to see you. We're like, okay, follow me. Do you need any waters? And we're like, yeah, sure, I guess. We're freaking out.
need any water. And I just said, do you guys understand how amazing your story is and what you've done? And
it is very compelling.
Extraordinary your level of maturity is in dealing with these extremely complex issues. How do you see all that now in retrospect?
I think now, well, like sitting back now, it's like, I think we realize now, you know, we're both 25 and the stuff that we were going through at such a young age, it's like we didn't realize it, I don't think, going through it. But now having our own children and stuff, it's like, wow, like we went through a lot of stuff that a lot of people wouldn't make it through. And I think it just comes from our childhood being super mature and learning how to navigate through hard issues in life.
And I think also, like, we were so used to it. So it was like, it wasn't something that was like, you guys are really extraordinary for like doing this. Or we were kind of just like, well, you know, this is life. And I don't know, I guess when you're that young, you don't really think about the severity of what you're really going through until you get older and you're able to look back at it with a kind of a more little wiser mind and be like, wow, that really was kind of intense for a 16-year-old.
Very true. Very true.
And Tyler, a lot of people don't know your history. Your mom was the one that told me what you had gone through as a younger child and the behavior issues. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was kicked out of my daycare. I could, my mom, eventually, there was the whole county. We went through all the preschools and I was just behavioral issues. I was always kicked out. I was suspended in first time in second grade and, you know, just kind of continued my whole life throughout school and any kind of authority figure I would challenge. And, just a lot of behavioral stuff. Some legal trouble I got into when I was really young and, it was just kind of chaotic. I was very, kind of a wild kid, I guess.
I think we were both crazy and chaotic until we found out we were pregnant with Carly, and then that's really when it all changed.
Well, to be fair, Tyler, you went to some sort of therapeutic school for a while, right? Your mom told me about that.
I did. I went to she tried putting me in a, what would you call it, a Catholic school with, like, nun ladies who would, like, try.
Nun ladies. I can't imagine that would have worked.
I swear. We had to call them sisters. And I was young. So she tried getting me into that after getting kicked out of all the other preschools that I was in and stuff like that. I eventually ended up going to alternative high schools. Kind of for kids who are wild, I guess.
But she told me you got some treatment along the way, what I think. My point is, I think that really worked for you.
It did. I think. Well, I mean, going to treatment when you're super young, it's a different experience because you know you have to go to this place. You don't really know why you're going there until the doctor or you know therapist that I was working with at the time tells you, like, hey, you know, you're in here for this, and your mom is worried about this, and but it did work for me for a little bit. It was kind of, doing it at a young age, though, was a little different for me. I didn't have a good time with it at first. It took me a while.
Well, but those kinds of professionals are accustomed to that. You can't reason with kids the same way you can with an adult, right?
Right.
So
as much as we like to try, looking back on, I mean, there's no point in going shoulda, woulda, coulda. But looking back on being a parent, as opposed to saying like, well, if I could do it all over again, I think every parent that's worth their salt as a parent looks back on even the day prior and said, man, if I could just have changed something a little bit. What have you – what if you were to really get a chance to try to parent your child as the mature person you are now,
they have a child now.
No, yeah. My point being like, I look, I'm 38 and I'm immature for my age anyway, but every single day I look back and I was like, I could probably handle that better. And I still think I do a pretty good job, but there's no possibility at 25 I could have been an effective parent. I can imagine as a teenager. So my question is, I guess, given that you're kind of forced to have a lot of retrospective outlooks on things because you're put on TV and people are forced to kind of force you to talk about your life and your parenting abilities and things. What are the main kind of tenets that you found to be true and you wish you could have learned earlier?
I guess for me, it'd be just, I guess just patience, having patience and to slow down and really just appreciate little things and not sweat the small stuff.
Yeah.
It's good advice.
It's very good advice.
So caught up with like, oh my God, my kid spilled this, and I need there's just so many stressful things about it that if you really just kind of pay attention to the good stuff and just not sweat the small stuff. Their kids are gonna spill it. It's gonna break. They're not gonna know how to react to that situation. They're, you know, I think just kind of slowing down, pumping the brakes a little bit.
Speaking of kids, I noticed your daughter's not been on your Instagram lately. Did your wife cut you off?
No.
You talking to me?
Yeah.
Oh no. No, I there just hasn't been as many opportunity. Okay. Well, she hasn't been as bonkers.
Okay.
And to me, also, like the only thing I only have one child and she's three, so it's not like I'm some expert. But the thing I have to work on, and I look back on and wish I would have learned earlier, is that I can't take the things that my daughter does so personally.
Oh,
like she's as dumb as my dog. She's a 3-year old. And I get so upset as if she's being mean to me, as if like she's doing it personally to me to make me angry. And the reality is she's a 3-year old. She has no impulse regulation. She has no ability to kind of act responsibly because she's a little kid. I get so hurt, like she's doing something to me to hurt my feelings. And the reality is she's just a little kid and she's a maniac.
Yeah, aren't they all little maniacs?
I do think so.
So, speaking of maniacs, how's Butch doing?
Oh God, he ain't doing too good. He ain't doing as good as he.
All right, let's explain to people who don't know. Butch is Tyler's dad. Butch has been in prison a lot. Butch is a drug addict, and he seemed in recent 18 months or so to be very interested in getting sober, though not so interested in meetings. But is that about a way to sum it up, Tyler?
Yeah, I definitely would say he actually just got off parole 3 days ago, which is his first time ever being off of parole. I mean, he's been on parole since he's
what, for 30 years?
Yeah, since he was
32. Think about that, Mike. 30 years.
He's super scared and nervous to be off parole.
Yeah.
Right. I think it's not having like the that babysitter to watch over him.
Yep.
So right now he's kind of like, I feel like, in this funk. He's like scared. He doesn't know what to do.
I honestly, I keep up on him a lot. I say, hey, Dad, how are you doing with your sobriety today? Uh-huh. I try not, you know, I've kind of tried to learn to take a different path with him instead of getting angry with him and kind of just shutting him off instead of really just trying to like focus on, okay, how are you doing today with your sobriety? Do you need anything? You need help or, you know, whatever the case is, you know, I try to kind of just, you know, be there for him as much as I can.
Well, guys,
he's struggling pretty bad right now.
Okay. So Mike, you guys, Mike has been always very vocal about the fact that he is in the program.
Yeah.
I have beaten Butch up as much as I can about going to meetings and getting a sponsor. He acknowledges it's what he wishes to do, intends to do, knows it's the right thing to do, doesn't do it. I've also beat up Tyler about Al-Anon, and he also does not go to Al-Anon.
You got to go, dude. Trust me, I'm a dually, so I'm in recovery myself, but I'm also an Al-Anon. I was very resistant to it as well, not the program, but Al-Anon, and because I thought, well, I'm dealing with my recovery, my addiction. Why do I have to worry about being the loved one of an addict? And it's shocking how relieving it becomes and how rewarding it is to go and sit down and talk to other people who are the child of an addict, the wife of an addict, the husband of, and you get this sense that, oh my gosh, much like with recovery, the feeling of knowing that you're not all alone with these experiences is so rewarding, and it becomes very therapeutic. Trust me, I really encourage you to do it.
You know, Dr. Drew has literally told me this for years now to go to Al-Anon. And I guess, I don't know, a part of me is like, I guess the anger, I need to get over the anger. It keeps kind of pulling me back where I'm just like, it's frustrating that I have to go to do this because you are the way you are. So I guess it's kind of like.
That's wildly understandable too, by the way. Don't feel like.
And a common feeling.
Yeah. I mean, I can empathize and I get, that's a very reasonable take? Why should I have to spend a couple hours a week doing something that admittedly is not very fun because my dad or my husband or my wife is a certain way? It doesn't seem to compute, but in the end, you really find a lot out of it.
And
you
and get a lot out of it. Different on top of when you're doing your own, you know, therapy. So it's like going to doing that, you know, and I feel like, which is a result of because you're an addict and you just now I'm going through, you know, therapy with doing this and I have to go to this other meeting now. It's just right.
How old
are you?
25.
I mean, I know this isn't popular to say out loud, but there is you can burn yourself out.
Oh yeah.
And I know a lot of people are like, well, it doesn't matter, it's so important. It is important, but at the same time, if this 25-year-old kid got a kid of his own, he's going to go to therapy every week. You want him to also go to two other meetings. Let's take it easy.
Yeah, no, I totally understand that. Completely understand it. But I just thought there was an opportunity for them to ask you questions, both either you guys about the program or about Al-Anon. I mean, Mike's very, very good resource for you.
And I also think that, like, as far as your father's concerned, and I don't want to talk poorly about the guy. I don't know him, and he's not here to defend himself.
It's impossible to talk poorly about Butch.
Okay. But I will say this.
He's awesome.
When someone says, no, I really know it's important, and I plan on getting to it, but I'm not doing it. Yeah. When it comes to the 12 steps, like I don't buy it. That means I don't want to.
Right.
That truly translates to I'm not going to do it.
And I flipped around a little bit and say at least he's contemplating.
Yeah.
I call it contemplating. But you're right. He's not going to do it, and he doesn't do it. So people have to go experiment and figure it out for themselves, I guess.
And also, I think for my dad, it's a little – he's comfortable. He gets comfortable with the people he hangs out with. He hangs out with the
That's the wrong thing.
Yeah. You know, he just gets – he gets way too comfortable, and I think he starts justifying all his decisions he makes. And
to be fair,
I try to remind him once in a while, like, hey, you know, how's your sobriety doing? This is an issue. Remember, like, you know, so I don't know. I probably should go to Al-Anon. Obviously, I need it.
To be fair to him, both you guys, by the way, because of April and stuff. But how's April doing, by the way? Your mom?
I'm doing awesome.
Good. Say hi for me, please. What the hell was I going to say about Butch? I forgot.
A lot to say about him. So.
My eyes are bothering me.
You asking how the Sundance Kid is doing?
All I can think about is my eyes.
All right, that's a good time for a break.
Time for a break? All right, we'll take a little break. We're back with Caitlin and Tyler from Teen Mom right after this.
Well, one of the great parts about working in recovery is seeing former patients successfully move on. And I've had patients that have come up to me years later and shake my hand and say, you know what, sometimes people are kicked out of treatment. And many of these folks move on to become mental health professionals themselves. And of course, the field of psychology is vast. The need for competent practitioners is huge. If you're considering this rewarding career, I urge you to consider the California School of Professional Psychology at Alliant University. Now, I've known them for a long time at Alliant University. I've spoken at their past events. It was founded in 1969. It's boasts an alumni network of nearly 50,000 people worldwide. And Alliant has fostered many of today's mental health pioneers, authors, and advocates. CSPP at Alliant University hosts both on-ground and online programs in business psychology, marriage and family therapy, clinical counseling. They also offer APA-accredited doctoral programs in clinical psychology that can allow for specialization in child psychology, clinical forensic psychology, and integrated psychology. And the faculty is crazy. It's made up of leaders and historical figures like Abraham Maslow, Carl Rogers, Viktor Frankl, some of the true fathers of modern psychology. For more information, and I worked alongside of these students as well, by the way, in the clinical setting, as well as having lectured at the institution. So for more on the California School of Professional Psychology, CSPP, at Alliant, click the Alliant banner on our website or visit Alliant, Alliant.edu, Alliant.edu. Hydrolyte, of course, you've heard me rave about these guys. It's a product that I actually wanted to develop myself. I conceived of this. I knew it was needed. It was already in Australia, and now it is here. It works. The feedback is unanimous. Even though it's great to use, though, when you're sick or dehydrated, you can use it every day, especially now that the weather is changing. It's hot. So whether you're exercising or maybe you've got seasonal allergies or you drank too much or you got vomiting or diarrhea, whatever it might be, you can reduce fatigue and keep feeling healthy as well. Once you've started feeling dehydrated, sometimes a little too late. So you want to stay hydrated. And rapid rehydration, if you do get dehydrated, requires a proper balance of sodium, glucose, and water. And nothing provides it like Hydrolyte. I'm telling you, it's the same as an IV fluid via your mouth, via your enteral system. It's based on established, proven science, quite simply the best rehydration product out there. It comes in great flavors. They have those fizzy tablets. Also, they have a powder and a pre-mixed drink. Compared to other sports drinks, Hydrolite delivers up to 4 times electrolytes with 75% less sugar. Hydrolite solutions are appropriate for all ages, and each bottle or package includes easy-to-follow directions. All right, you can find Hydrolite at Rite Aid or online at Amazon or click through at drdrew.com. And for a limited time, our listeners save 30% on Hydrolite if you use the code DRDREW, Dr. Drew, HY at checkout. That is DRDREWHY. 30% off. Great deal. Do it.
And welcome back. We're here with our friends Tyler and Caitlin from Teen Mom. And to you guys that are asking why I have sunglasses on, because my eyes are closed because I had eye surgery. And I'm in extreme pain, although I'm adequately distracted by this great conversation. And I welcome your questions. I had a radial keratotomy, and I am, like, in pain. And it's hard for me to open my eyes, especially with lights here for the Facebook thing. And so I apologize. I'm embarrassed sitting here wearing sunglasses, but I'd be more embarrassed looking at a camera with my eyes closed. So that's the reason I'm wearing sunglasses.
We actually have some calls for our guests.
Let's do it.
Let me get right to that.
You guys are there? Caitlin, Tyler?
We're here.
All right, excellent.
All righty. Let's talk to Colleen, is it?
Yes, it is.
Hello there.
Hi, Colleen.
Hello.
All righty.
Hi.
Hey, Colleen, whatever you're listening to the podcast on, can you turn that down?
Oh, yeah, okay. I'll just...
Thank you.
Yeah, just as you're listening to your phone. Anybody who's waiting to call, just listen on your phone.
Pardon?
Just listen on your phone. Go ahead, Colleen.
Okay, hi. Hi. Hi, Caitlin and Tyler.
Hi.
Hi. I love you guys.
Ah, thank you.
Thanks.
So does your dog.
Who's Yorkshire Terrier?
I love how you're raising your daughter and the way the choices you've made. And you inspire me to pursue what I'm trying to do.
Which is?
Which is what?
Porn.
I'm in the process of adopting a 8-year-old child.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Who's in foster care. Yeah.
That is awesome.
And she has a disability.
From foster care, is that what you said?
Yeah. She
sorry,
has,
my little yappers, they came to my house.
I'm sorry. Go ahead and continue. I'm sorry. I just want to explain the crazy noise that's going on over here. Sorry.
Well, I'm trying to figure
that's
out the
dog,
I'm trying
right?
to figure out the breed. Is it a Yorkie? Yorkie? That's what it sounds like.
It's a Chihuahua. It's even worse.
Oh, nice.
Oh, no.
Wow. I have cats, so they're quiet.
Okay.
So you're adopting somebody, an 8-year-old, out of foster care. What's in? How soon? What's happening? Where are you at in the process?
Right now, it's kind of, I got visits with her, supervised visits through the department. I've seen her once in the last year and a half.
Oh, my.
It's kind of a tricky situation.
But you're going to see it through?
My daughter, yeah, I want to adopt her because she's never had a family.
Oh, wow.
This child has been in foster care since she was 6 months old.
Unfortunately, there's a lot of that, a lot in this country, and where it really gets dicey is when they have to graduate out of foster care into the world, and there's the services are just inadequate in most areas of most states. So good for you.
I'm actually in Canada, Edmonton, Alberta, Canada.
We couldn't tell.
I'm Canadian. Yes.
Well, I'll tell you what, that's really
but,
amazing.
Yeah,
I have to kind of impress you that there's a lot of kids that don't get that opportunity or anyone that even
looks at them to adopt.
Yeah, so I think it's amazing what you're doing.
Yeah, I think it's great. So, Colleen, good luck and keep us posted, okay?
Thank you, Colleen.
Appreciate it very much.
That's a serious commitment.
Oh, my goodness.
And let's see here. We have another call for our guests here. Let's talk to... I'm sorry. No, that's is she also named Connie? I just don't want to make a mistake.
The other one was Colleen, I think.
Okay, good. Hello, Connie.
Hello, guys. You live.
You live.
I've missed you guys. Thank you for having this
You Live podcast. Great. Yeah,
it is a real gift to society.
Where's Connie calling from?
Connie is calling from, I'm going to say, the Valley.
I'm going to say Western Europe.
No.
Where are you calling from?
No, OC.
Oh, Orange County. Okay.
Oh, you.
Okay. All right. So what's going on?
I have a question regarding borderline personality disorder.
Okay.
My daughter, I guess, has been diagnosed with that.
Yep.
And I've always known since she was a little girl that something is up.
Yeah.
And I, for a long time, thought it was just oppositional defiance.
Right. It looks the same. But it looks the same.
It turns out it is.
Yeah. It looks very similar, doesn't it? So what's the question?
Yes. I don't know how to approach her with anything. With like, it doesn't matter how I, you know, talk to her.
Yeah.
It's just really hard because she always takes things so next level.
Yeah.
And it's really frustrating because I try to help her and I feel like I can't, like I'm really stuck.
Okay. Well, it's very frustrating, and those are real concerns, and that's in the nature of the borderline process, right? I think the important thing for you is to get support, so you have somebody in your corner so you can stay sort of firm where you have to set boundaries, learn as much as you can about the borderline process, borderline disorder, and then she needs to get into dialectical behavioral therapy. Is she getting into DBT at all?
Yes, she has been seeing a therapist that was doing CBT,
DBT,
told her, you know, you need to ask.
DBT is a little better for borderlines. And it, again, the way I think that I like to think about some of the, you know, the painful part of being around the borderline patient or individual is, remember that when they get upset, they cannot appreciate that your mind even has content. They lose track of other people's sort of existence. And they're
absolutely,
which is sort of extra painful because when they're in a calmer moment, they kind of can do that. But when they get escalated, it loses it, and they get into this sort of, you know, extreme emotionality and the fear of abandonment, and then and it's just all over the place, right? And then they use something called projective identification, which is their feelings they push out into you, so you feel all crazy and spun around. So, you know, you've got to be able to just keep your feet square on the ground when these things happen, and you need somebody in your corner. You need like a therapist or another mom who's dealing with this, something.
I've talked to her therapist before, but, you know, just like yesterday's show, I just feel like no one really has a time where no one I just feel really.
No, you're right. You're right.
Lost,
no, that's true. But that's why I was saying, you know, that's why when we were talking to Tyler about going to Al-Anon, that's why I would say look for a support group for moms, you know, with borderline kids, that kind of thing, and find somebody you can have in your court, somebody you can just have to stand with you when you need a shoulder to lean on. And that will go a long way. You'll be surprised. It doesn't have to be a therapist, okay?
Okay. And one more thing. She has a really hard time maintaining friends.
Sure.
For the same reason.
Sure.
And I feel like sometimes I try to kind of step in and help her relationships, but I don't know how far I can go as far as, like, letting her friends, her closer friends, I guess, know what her situation is.
How old is she?
23.
Yeah, it's rough.
Yeah, you have to have permission from your daughter to do that. Yeah, I'm sure you've learned the other part about dealing with the borderline process is you have to be super clear, really clear about everything. And don't give any opportunity for splitting, right? You know what splitting is?
Yeah.
Good, bad.
Yeah, she.
You violated me. I can't trust you anymore. That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And so she could easily turn your trying to help her into, you're an evil witch. I can't trust you. You violated my trust. You know, if she feels that way in that moment. And so you got to go, look, I'd like to help, you know, and then really be sure she hears you. That's the other thing. It's like, okay, I'm going to go talk to Susie now, and here's what I'm going to tell Susie. And so, so you reduce the potential for that flip, okay?
Okay, and one last thing.
Yeah.
Her psychiatrist right now has prescribed her Zoloft and lorazepam, which I'm kind of – does that even help her? I mean, she also has anxiety disorder.
Yeah. The lorazepam I'm a little nervous about, but the Zoloft can help. Can help with the anxiety. And the borderlines usually do end up on some medication, and it usually does help them a little bit. So.
All right, Connie, do you think that
good luck. Sorry to cut her off.
She's asking if Lamictal would be helpful. I am a big fan of mood stabilizers in situations like this. So I don't know about Lamictal so much as a mood stabilizer. Talk to the psychiatrist about that.
Okay.
My question, I'd like to know.
How about that, Tyler? Do you guys understand what that was all about?
Yeah, I mean, that sounds really intense. I can't imagine like what that's like. That's, wow.
Kate, go ahead.
We watched Amber Portwood struggle with, you know, her mental illness too. And I know she was diagnosed with something similar.
Yes, she was. That's right.
Yeah. And it's super hard for her. I can see it. And
I empathize with her.
Yeah, I really do. Because even me, just with depression and paralytic like panic attacks and stuff, I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy.
How's that going? How's your panic and stuff?
Really good, actually. I'm not on 200 milligrams of Zoloft anymore. I'm on 150.
Good.
And I feel better. Good. I would love to get it even lower more, so we'll just see and keep going with the flow.
Excellent.
But I feel good. So
good. You sound great. I mean, you seem like you're really yourself again.
Yeah, I feel like
myself. She's gotten really, really, really good with her coping skills. And yeah. She kind of knows to take time for herself.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen a huge improvement. So,
oh, my God. You can hear it. I mean, there was like a year ago, things were not so great.
No. Yeah, no.
We have another.
I feel like a completely different person.
Yeah. Yeah. We have another call, but Lindsay is clearly developmentally disabled, so I'm going to say hello, caller.
Hello?
Yes.
What's your name?
Hi, my name is Marissa.
Marissa.
Yes.
Yes. Hi. About 6 years ago, I was in a domestic violence situation, and I had to. I chose open adoption for my son, and I have three other children. And I was under the impression that the open adoption was going to be more open. And the adoptive parents told me that we were going to all have more communication and everything. And the adoptive parents told me that and told my children that we were going to have, that it wasn't going to be the last time they were going to see my son. And they went from more open to just pictures. And I don't understand why they made that decision. But I guess my question is, I am having a hard time talking to them and understanding why. And my question is, how do I talk to them?
Hang on, Marissa. I think you've come to the right place. All right, guys. Who wants to start?
Well, hello, fellow birth mother. First of all, hello. I want to give a lot of props. From being a birth mother, I always feel like women who place children who already have children their own, to me, you guys are 10 times stronger than the normal average birth mom. And I give you huge props for that.
That's a good point. I never thought about it that way.
Me either.
And I'm sorry that you have to be going through this. I mean, even with ours, I feel like as birth moms, we always want it to be as open as possible. And we want to be able to see them all the time and have birthday parties with them and things like that. And I noticed for a while in our relationship with our adoptive parents, things started kind of, distance and slowing down. And, you know, we would randomly get pictures and stuff. But I try to put it in her shoes as in, like, Raina and Teresa couldn't have kids. And I feel like now that they had them, like, they're super scared of, like, losing them or, like, I don't know. And it's hard for me to talk to Teresa, too, because I think it's hard for her to be open with me. And I would really push you in the direction of looking. It's called On Your Feet Foundation. You can find them on Google. So it's On Your Feet Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all ran by birth moms for birth moms. They have retreats for birth moms, and you can go there. Mm-hmm. And if you can't afford your way there, they have things that'll help pay for you to get there and stuff. And honestly, I went there and it changed my life. It helped me totally like relate with other birth moms and understand where I was coming from and hearing different sides. And it really helped. If I were you, I would look it up. It's On Your Feet Foundation. And they always have their retreats in the summer and in the fall. And they're always usually in Michigan City, Indiana. And like I said, they will help you get there too if you have no way of getting there. They are awesome.
And they also have a program for birth moms and adoptive moms.
Yes, it's a retreat too where it's the birth moms will go to the retreat with the adoptive moms. And it helps learn about communication and hearing both sides of, you know, the birth parent side and the adoptive parent side, which honestly I invited Teresa to and I'm hoping she'll say yes to going too. So, you know, you have to keep talking about it. and just expressing your feelings to them. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that, as long as you come out respectful and just honest.
And keep reaching out as much
as you can. And just keep reaching out as much as you can. There's nothing wrong with that.
Right. I haven't reached out to her for a while because I feel like, I don't know, I feel like it was something I said, or because I did one time say, you know, I think I made a big mistake, you know, and I shouldn't have said that. But I know I made the right decision, but she kind of cut me off, you know. And
But how could
it scares not me. Go it, through it, those it, feelings?
Of course. But you have to be addressed with those feelings.
Of course. It scares the adoptive parent, though. That's all.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that is scary, you know, but... I guess it's learning how to...
I was going through some feelings, and I said that, and I think she got upset.
We're allowed to feel that way, and you can text her and tell her. Even
Write her a letter or text her.
I'm sorry if I didn't mean to offend you or afraid you. I was just feeling, can we talk sometime?
Yep.
I mean, Tyler and I and Ray and Teresa had to sit down and have a face-to-face conversation a couple years ago and put it all out on the table, how we felt, how they felt, what their fears were, what our fears were. And to do that for you, I think.
Yeah, thanks, Marissa. Thank you, Marissa.
And then Caitlin and Tyler have the craziness of television on top of everything else, right? Yeah. So
that makes everything healthier.
Yeah,
always.
You guys have been a big inspiration. Your guys' story, I've been following you guys from the beginning.
Oh, I dropped her.
Oh, nice, Mike.
Well, no, they cut me some slack in that there's a nice 40-second lag time to dropping someone, so it's like I didn't have any real control over it.
But you want to know what, though? That's the only reason why we do the show is right there, Dr. Drew. Yeah.
No, I know how important that is to you. I do. I know you guys have been great about this. And you know, what's going on this season? Any highlights we should know about?
Oh, God.
Well, they're filming us getting on the, getting our farm together. They filmed me purchasing a few more crazy animals. And
the launch of our business.
Tier Rain, which is going really awesome. TierRain.com. We do like little kids' clothes.
There you go. Sandra was calling in to ask you specifically about your clothing line. So thank you, Sandra, for the call. And there you go. You got your answer.
Where do people get it?
Pardon me?
Where do they get that stuff, your clothing?
www.tierrarain.com.
TierraRain.
And it's the same for Instagram and Twitter. It's at Tierra Rain. And it's 2T to 6. And
all handmade in the USA by awesome women in Detroit.
They're actually made in Detroit, Michigan. So we're really super stoked about that.
And Susan, any questions off Facebook? Anybody got anything there?
I hope I put that on right. Let's see. I have a friend who goes to Al-Anon meetings because he's the child of an alcoholic mom, but he twists their teachings to fit his own moods and still drinks himself and mixes alcohol with his psych meds. He's bipolar too and scary enough when he drinks, worse when he goes off the meds.
And
back to that topic.
What would he like? Is there a question behind that?
I don't know.
I just want to let you know how effed up this guy was.
I know. That's all I hear.
That's a good one.
Guy's upsetting me. Okay.
Well, I get a lot of your amazing couple, and you've been through a lot, and the limelight is tough. I do have an interesting email, though, here that I think that Mike should read.
Okay.
Because I cannot.
Can I just make Drew try and read it just for my own personal
No.
If you want. It's kind of it hurts my
eyes. I get these all the time.
Hello, Dr. Drew. My name is Kylie. I am 26 years old and a single mom of three. I had my youngest when I was 21. I was 16 when I got pregnant with my first, 18 when I got pregnant with my middle, and I was 18 when I got pregnant with my middle one, and 20 when I got pregnant with my youngest. I was reaching out to see if anybody there was I was reaching out to see if maybe there was a possibility you would be interested in featuring my life with my children on a show to really show what becoming a teen mom can do if you are not fortunate. Well, can I just step in and say, like, from the little I've seen of Teen Mom, it's not like the Trump kids are getting pregnant.
I get so many of these, but Reed, she's on food stamps. And
I live in Section 8 housing, and I received food stamps this past Monday. Was the first time
To be fair, you guys tell me if I'm right about this, but that Teen Mom show, the British show, seems to be one that's really showing folks that are struggling. Am I right about that?
Yeah,
I agree. Honestly, I think when the show first started, I think that was a case when it first kind of
premiered. For all you guys.
Now we're all 26 and we've created businesses.
And
the show honestly blew up. I mean, we were the original. We had no idea this was gonna turn into this.
When we first did it, we thought it was going to be like true life. I'm 16 and pregnant. And they didn't even know what it was going to be yet.
Right.
So,
yeah. I don't know.
Hey, any contact with anybody else? You said you were in contact with Amber, and she's doing great lately. How about Macy and all that stuff with Ryan? Any updates?
Well, no. I know I talked to Macy when Ryan first went to treatment and stuff, which was awesome. But Ty and I always keep in contact with Macy and Taylor and Amber.
Is Macy better off with I forget her name, the Ryan's fiance or wife? Hmm.
Who, Mackenzie?
Mackenzie.
I'm not sure, really. Okay. I don't ever like
ask dig too much.
Too much. I'm just like, hey, girl, what's up? How you been? How are the kids? Cool. You know, that type of thing. But, like, we are all super close. We love each other. We love to hang out and have a good time with each other. And Farrah? We're just friends.
I like how Drew just breaks right to it. Farrah!
Oh, no.
Oh! Nobody really talks to
her. I don't think anyone likes
her. I just saw her naked in Vegas recently.
Really? Yeah. Sweet.
She wasn't wearing much.
So. Yeah, but that was in your suite, which is the weird part. I don't know why she was.
Don't you guys feel bad for some of the stuff the Farrah gets into that she pulls down on herself? I do.
I feel bad for everyone. I feel bad. People got on my case because I said I felt bad for Aaron Hernandez.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, obviously I don't feel bad as I feel for the victims.
Yeah.
But it's incredibly sad. I mean, the guy had he had life by the balls. What an amazing story. He brought himself out of abject poverty with no father. He was this amazing talent. And then he goes off the rails and he's committing suicide. Of course I feel sorry for Farrah. She's a human being.
Yep.
People act like she's Osama bin Laden. I mean, she's a wacky broad, you know, but she's a human being, you know. Let's stop here.
I think it's sad that I think she maybe has struggled with mental illness or something her whole life or something and has never sought treatment for it. I mean, but the thing is you can only feel bad for somebody for so long when they're so mean to everybody.
Let me ask Tyler, Caitlin, and Dr. Drew, are three people that are maybe the best to talk about this. I don't know what the answer is, and I have my suspicions, but then I go back and forth on this. When it comes to the taboo of mental health, not the actual effects and the treatment.
The stigma.
When it just did the stigma and your own personal kind of resistance to dealing with it, does TV help or harm?
TV meaning?
Meaning being on TV trying to deal with mental health problems, is your own kind of resistance increased? Is the people around you, is their judgment of you, is it increased?
Wait. I don't get the question. So if you're on TV and you have mental health issues, does being on TV make things worse, better, or in between?
Worse, better, in between. And I don't mean just like the actual treatment, like the end result.
Just
I'm talking about
it.
Like
stigma.
The average American has a baseline level of resistance and stigma to mental health and mental health treatment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does it help or hurt to be on TV while you're dealing with it?
Caitlin?
I would say for me in the beginning, it was hard, and I would say probably hurtful, honestly. But now that I've gone through it and it was all on TV and I've made it out like a better person, I would have to say that there was a benefit of me being so raw and vulnerable and actually showing it. Because I've actually helped a lot of people, like through my Twitter feed and Facebook and all that stuff. I always see like all these people are like, I'm so happy that you talk about mental illness like you do. And you're bringing it out in a sense, you know, where teenagers can see it. Was it hard to talk about on TV? Absolutely. Did I want to? Not really. I was super standoffish and scared and gave me even more anxiety because I didn't want the whole world to judge me.
And it's also really hard when they're seeing symptoms for, you know, a year straight without any explanation. So they're
judging me on those symptoms.
On those behaviors, you know, so it's kind of.
So it is hard.
Yeah.
But I think it's better when it does end up being a successful story where it's like, look, you can get help. There is help out there. Just because you feel like your world is crumbling and life is over, you can become better and healthier. And
there's a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, there's a light at the end of the tunnel.
I want to make 3 points. One is, it's the real problem with stigma and mental illness is how people stigmatize the people who are having symptoms of mental illness, like Caitlin was, or like that SC professor was. You know, people manifest behaviors and symptoms. That's when you resist the stigma, everybody, not when people come out and say, hey, I'm better, I've had treatment. It's easy then. It's when they're behaving ways that we don't like that are upsetting. That's when you need to not stigmatize people, number one. Number two, essentially everybody that I've dealt with that had some sort of experience with mental health treatment on television, whatever the setting, whether it's Caitlin or Celebrity Rehab, whatever it is, they all describe exactly what Caitlin is describing, which is, and then my third point is that treatment generally works. So yeah. They generally have a decent response. They all want to share it with the world and are grateful to have the opportunity to share it through television, which is a surprise to me. I didn't know everyone was going to feel that way, but that is something very, very commonly expressed.
Hopefully that's helping the stigma.
Yeah, I hope. Exactly.
But I know from the patients themselves, when at least in recovery, in addiction, I don't know about other kind of mental health issues. People who deal with addiction on TV almost always have a better sense of urgency when dealing with their recovery because they're given that evidence of like, oh my God, that's how I am.
Right.
Seriously, that's how I behave. Because I even myself, I'll be fully honest. I have this way, like I think every human being does, of making things much nicer in retrospect.
So
when
on.
I look back on it, it's like, I can put a little sunshine on that bad
boy. You mean addicts minimize and deny? Are you kidding?
Yeah, but there's a difference between minimize and deny is when I'm talking to you about it.
Yeah.
I'm talking about when I'm sitting on my couch thinking back about it. I have a way of introducing myself to a girl I had sex with 15 times. I have a way of making that a lot nicer than it probably really was.
Mm-hmm.
I have a way of, you know, lying directly to my parents' face and crashing cars. And I have a way of making that a lot easier in my head than even – now, if I had a nice VH1 camera on it, there's no getting around it. I was like, what? Really? I said that? Yeah. I did that? Yeah. You got to be kidding me.
I call that holding people
accountability.
Yeah, really. Accountability. Yeah, he's right. That's what I think it is, Tyler, too. I think it's accountability. You still there?
Yeah.
There you are. So – all right.
I feel like they're like judges on those judge shows. Like, I want to know what's going on below the nipple level because I don't know. I feel like maybe they could be, you know, playing a little footsie, maybe even a little bit more racy. Who knows?
You never know.
I know the chihuahua's running around under there, whatever's going on.
Where's the peanut butter then?
Outside. That's why I disappeared for a minute.
I see. I'm not, you know, I'm preoccupied by my. Again, to explain why I'm wearing sunglasses, and newcomers on the Facebook stream. I had eye surgery, and I'm uncomfortable, and I have to keep my eyes closed, and it'd be too weird for me to just look at a camera with my eyes closed.
So you have your wife, beautiful wife Susan, driving you around?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so you pretty much can't see.
Yeah.
Who's more dangerous, a female driver or you right now?
Me, okay. For sure.
All right.
But I'll tell you.
It's a toss-up.
I'll tell you,
that's
she,
a good answer.
But I'll tell you what. Let me tell you a quick sidebar. Is so she had me carry a big box of food here, and she had to literally lead me by the arm and led me right into a curb, like directly into a curb.
Did you trip and fall?
I had it not just been time where the tips of my toes hit the curb, I would have flown in the air. But it just coincided, just by sheer luck, I hit it just right. And I said, like, that's a stair.
I would have paid all my money to watch you fall and trip with holding
so. Stuff. She may be a better driver, but not so much as a blind leading the blind, shall we say, or
as a
guide.
A guide, yes.
So, Susan, anything else on Facebook?
Oh, I'm sorry. Let me go back over there. I was just texting our next guest to make sure that she doesn't call in the middle of this. Which it might be kind of interesting. But, no, everybody's just very supportive. They want to say that, you know, oh, here's one. I don't think Farrah has mental issues. She's just spoiled rotten brat.
Yeah,
now,
well, I'm sure that was from a licensed physician.
I've met Farrah, and I actually like Farrah.
Right.
And she's a sweet person. Like, it's just, but you just see the blow, when she blows up on the air. You don't get an hour. We did a podcast with her.
Yes.
And she's very interesting.
She's honestly, behind closed doors, it's a whole different ball.
Well, that's exactly
I've had
the
luxury
point.
Of interviewing her in person, and I am also much like that person who just dropped bombs on Farrah via Twitter. I am also not trained in any way. I have no level of credibility, or I'm not qualified to make these claims because I'm just a dude. But what I am is someone who, unlike these people on Twitter, has had a chance to look her in the eyes and have a conversation in real life.
Yeah.
And I will say this. There's definitely something beyond her own control going on. There's a dissociation.
Right.
There is some weird thing where
when she
you think there can be drugs and alcohol involved?
No.
Not me personally. I just don't feel it.
Okay. No.
And addicts are pretty good usually of like,
telling other addicts. No, it's and people only see the escalation on TV. They don't see the Farrah that we kind of know as a person who is, you know.
Well, And Dr. Drew, nobody knows her childhood trauma either.
Right. She's been very circumspect about that.
I wish she would open up and talk about it, because then maybe a lot of people would actually understand where she's coming from and maybe
I agree with you.
We got her father's childhood trauma.
Yeah, the dad had been.
He was a cool cat. I enjoyed talking to that
guy.
We
interviewed Michael, guys.
Hmm.
And he was sexually abused as a kid? Was that what it was? Yeah. I forget. Yeah, he had sexual abuse. And and he had all kinds of feelings about that, and it created all kinds of behavior. He's had some treatment since, and so he really is really trying to make a change.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that he's starting to open up about his stuff. Yeah. I think that'll help everyone kind of understand the dynamics they have all with each other.
Yeah, that's right.
When I was in treatment, when I was a young kid, that was a huge thing that they told me about my sexual abuse when I was a kid. That's what kind of manifested all my behaviors that I had with authority figures. It's something, honestly, I will say that I think sexual abuse among men needs to be talked about more. And it's something that needs to be, just kind of, because that's very, I mean, you're supposed to be a boy. You don't cry. You know. You want sexual advances without invitation all the time because you're a boy, and it's not true. It needs to be talked about more.
So it sounds like Tyler, something like what you had, Mike.
It does. Yeah. It does. Well, I lost my virginity very young, and Tyler, you're exactly right. And it's such a weird thing, especially in America. I do encourage the idea, this traditional idea that, look, men, boys are supposed to grow up to be men, and there is a certain level of grit and toughness and resiliency that I think we've kind of lost in this like wussy generation. At the same time, that doesn't apply to identifying very serious problems, trauma, and then dealing with it appropriately.
Yes.
I think we confuse the two to mean like, a boy doesn't need to go see a therapist. A boy doesn't need to talk about his problems. He's got to be tough. It's like, no, a boy shouldn't cry when he skins his knee. Doesn't necessarily mean he shouldn't open up about getting raped as a kid. I mean, it's a huge cavern between the two.
And Tyler, I don't know what Mike, can I talk about your thing?
Of course.
Yeah, Tyler, I don't know your specifics, but Mike was like 12, 13 and had a 19-year-old adult abuse him.
And it was consensual.
He saw it as consensual at the time, but knew something weird had happened and was ashamed of it.
Yeah, see, mine wasn't consensual. I was about 9 and she was about 15.
Yeah, so but it's similar. It's similar. And then people don't talk about that one.
Because people think that boys are just going to like it. Girls can be scarred if a guys enjoy it.
Well, not only that, the boy kind of thinks to himself that he doesn't really put it in the same category. I had to bring it out to Mike and go, Mike, that was sexual abuse. I was like, dude, what are you talking about? And it brought up a lot of stuff.
Well, my animal side suspected that there was something wrong, to the point that I was the horniest 7th grader on the planet. All I thought about was sex. All I did was beat off every free moment I had. Yet when this happened, instinctively I knew something was wrong because I didn't tell anybody. I didn't tell anybody until I was like 30. I was on the air at Loveline, and I opened up about it. And Drew's like, "Oh, well, this is terrible. This is child abuse."
I did not react to that. I said, "Dude, I had to convince you."
He doesn't
you.
Hear himself.
I had to convince you that's what it was.
I actually got a lot of trouble in school for being hypersexual at a young age. Yeah, I learned in therapy that was a cause of it, and that's why you thought it was okay at your age and other kids didn't, and I got in trouble for it.
I totally agree that we should identify abuse and deal with mental health issues with young men the same way we do with women, and it's a shame that we don't. I think Tyler brought up a very good point, and it should be echoed again. Now, there is a difference when a hot teacher bangs a 17-year-old boy and bangs a 17-year-old girl. There is a difference.
What?
You know what you want? Because we hear so many of these stories, like 30-year-old teacher bangs three of her male students at a high school. Now, don't get me wrong. That is not healthy. That is not something I want to see happen. But trust me, those boys will be way better off than the disgusting 35-year-old guy who bangs his high school female student.
17-year-olds.
Yeah, I mean, trust me, those guys they'll manage.
They will not be as traumatized.
Yeah.
However, their outcomes are not no bueno. They're out in terms of addiction, personality disorders, truancy,
intimacy,
criminal behavior,
trouble.
Intimacy, all of that gets affected. So, what's that, Caitlin?
Like turning into like man whores, just wanting it all the time.
Yeah.
No, it can happen, but it's really more that they end up in trouble. They end up in real serious trouble.
They want older women. They don't want their own age group. Well, here's another thing. Down.
Here's another thing. What? I do think that we don't
criminal stuff.
We don't give enough value on as far in negative value. Put enough at negative value on guys being man whores. In that, I definitely engaged in unhealthy sexual behavior as a single man because I could. And everyone was just like, well, what do you expect? You're a young guy. And if a girl bangs four different people in one night, there she's going to get a talking to. Now, I'm not saying that there's anything necessary that you could, you're a grown adult, you could do what you want to do. But people just pat me on the back. And I definitely almost all the time would wake up feeling relatively empty after those encounters. And I knew that it only fueled my inability to have real intimacy, but I would do it anyway. And pretty much everyone around me is like, dude, what a stud you are, you know? And so I'm not saying like, don't do it. I'm not saying I have the way to live life. I have it penned down. Like I got it, the proper adult life. At the same time, I'm just saying there is something to being a man whore that isn't all that healthy. And it's, if you're that guy, maybe look into some like intimacy issues that you may have. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
And we should be quicker to call things sexual addiction and sexual compulsion than we do. I'm not saying you have to get treatment, but look at those behaviors, you know, look at them as expressions of something at least.
It is a pisser though that in this country the only time a celebrity male will get treatment for sexual addiction is when his wife catches him cheating.
Well, but that's
you know what I'm saying? This is awfully convenient, asshole.
That's what people say, is that, yeah. They're just using it as an excuse, or had they not been caught. But that's the whole point. If there not been consequences, there may not have been the motivation to get treatment. But be that as it may, guys, I really appreciate you spending time with us. Caitlin, Tyler, I'll take my glasses off just for a minute here the best I can.
Oh, there he is. There he is. Hey,
I can't keep my eyes.
I think your eyes are a different color.
Yourself, Dr.
What do you mean?
I've never noticed those like green highlights and stuff.
Yeah, they're very green these days, right?
I think it's because of the shirt. That's really
sexy
weird.
Eyes.
Maybe.
I have a boner.
You're
sexy eyes. Did I say that out loud?
Those are my eyes, though. You guys can't have them.
Yeah, Susan's got them. They're yours.
So what is the name of your clothing line again?
Tierra Rain, tierrarain.com, TIERRARAREIGN. Really cute handmade clothes in the USA for kids.
Nice.
And guys, I want to say thank you for joining us, but also, moreover, what a privilege it's been to be with you during this journey. I mean, you guys have really been a joy to be around and a privilege to watch you navigate all you have done and you know, best on the new house and everything. I think it's going to be quite a cool time there for you guys.
Thanks, Dr. Drew. Maybe you'll just have to come out and we'll have to put you to work on the farm.
I will. That sounds good to me.
That's a reality show.
But trust me, it will be to do an intervention on Butch. So,
hey, all right.
Because if he doesn't get it motivated, I'm going to come out there and smack his ass. Get in there and drag him to the meeting.
I don't need some.
All right.
Thanks for having us.
All right, guys. Nice to meet you guys.
Thank you.
You too.
And you live, everybody. Go to drdrew.com for all the other podcasts. Don't forget the people that support this show. We appreciate you supporting them. They support us. And we keep doing these things. And Mike, thank you.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It really is.
We'll see everyone next time.
Remember, you can find all these podcasts at drdrew.com. The Dr. Drew podcast, the This Life podcast, and the Adam and Drew podcast, which is available 5 days a week. Find them all on iTunes and rate us 5 stars. Subscribe and get it first. And if you're really happy, click on the Amazon banner at drdrew.com to help support the show. We'll thank you for it. If you join the email list via drdrew.com/contact, we'll send you a weekly infusion newsletter with Dr. Drew's news. We're so grateful when you get in touch. We read all your emails and we'll bring you the subject matter you want to hear about.
You live.